I knew nothing about finances. I was so unprepared just for life. Like, I just, all I knew was I didn't want to owe anybody money. Like, that was it. Like, that was all I knew. Welcome to Girl Gone Frugal again, where we talk about all things money. I am super excited to be recording this episode from my car as it charges because battery died with my friend Sherrianne Crumbly, who is just the most fabulous person ever. She is also one of the owners of K&S Financial. So, Sherrianne, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today as I sit in my car charging.
I love it.
And I just am looking forward to geeking out about money and talking about your money journey and just what you're up to. So for those people who aren't familiar with you, if you could please introduce yourself and what you do.
Sure. So as you said so beautifully, and I'm so humbled by that introduction. I am Sherrianne Crumbly, and I co-own with my husband K&S Financial .com, and we actually have another website, Fat Guy Skinny Wallet, both of which deal with personal finance. K&S Financial deals with personal finance from a biblical perspective, so that is more spiritual base, I guess you can say, in our approach to how we talk about finances. And it's more didactic, so it is more teaching about money, giving advice about debt, credit, all those beautiful things. And Fat Guy Skinny Wallet, which originally was just my husband, if you're wondering why I said fat guy, so was really his journey to lose weight and get out of debt. And somehow I got incorporated into that whole thing pretty much from YouTube because people would see me on there like, you got to have your wife on more. So
I
it really
love
is now
having
both
you guys
of us.
Those videos.
So, yeah, so that really is now both of us. And so, yeah, it's our journey to do both things and to just kind of share our lives with everyone as we, you know, as we pursue our goals.
I wanted to first start with your financial story and how you even got into blogging. Like, when you two got married, was one person a spender, the other a saver? Did one person have debt, or what was the picture like? And when you guys came together, and how did the blogging come to be?
Okay, well, all right. So let me. You have to go back a little further than marriage to get into that, but
let's do it because I'm in this car.
So let me tell you about my financial story to kind of make sense of it.
Okay.
So me personally. We got married at around 26 years old, right? So up until I was 24, let's say, 24, pretty much, my financial story was really boring. I had no debt. I had, like, two small credit cards. My credit score was 800. Like, life was good. And then I went back to school, and I took on student loans. And then we were getting married, and I took on, like, a little bit more credit card debt from planning the wedding. So, honestly, that was, like, the extent of my financial and debt experience was just those simple things. So, my financial background was a little bit, you know, simple. So, my husband's story was a little more complicated. You know, so he had a lot more debt than I did, and he actually got his bachelor's and master's like around the same time before we got married. So he had a lot more student loan debt, you know, and he just had a lot more credit history with different things than I did, with buying a car, with all that stuff. I didn't have any of that. So pretty much, I'm not blaming him for our debt because, like I said, I brought my little things into our marriage in terms of an experience, not amount, but I just had no financial knowledge at all. You know what I mean? Like, all I knew before that was I didn't want any debt, you know, and I had my student loans and I was going to pay them off. Like, that's all I knew. Like, I knew nothing about finances. I was so unprepared just for life. Like, all I knew was I didn't want to owe anybody money. Like, that was it. Like, that was all I knew.
Did you ever have conversations at home about money? Like, did your parents ever say, Sherri-Ann, like, these are things that you need to be aware of, and let's talk investing, and like, what were the
No.
lessons that you got from home that you brought into your marriage?
Primarily, I would say, like, I love my parents, but they never really sat down and taught us or taught me about money in that way. The three main things I can say that I got from my upbringing from my parents are, number one, I remember my dad being really evangelistic about not having credit card debt anymore. Like, he paid off his credit cards and he was like, I will never own a credit card ever again. Like, it was the most evil thing on
I'm with
earth.
him. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so he was just like, I will never do this again. I will never get into credit card debt. So that was the first thing. The second thing was because, you know, we're from Jamaica. So I was born in Jamaica. So when he came here and he had his job for a while and he discovered this amazing thing called a 401k, his whole life changed. He was just like, what, they gonna give me money for retirement? You know what I mean? Like, so I remember, and then he just had newspaper articles, whatever he could find out about his retirement, you know, like he poured every cent to that point into his retirement. And I remember him saying, like, I need to pay myself first. Like, that was a lesson he learned from that, was I need to pay myself first.
How old was he when he had that kind of, I hate to say it this way, but like a come to Jesus
Right,
moment?
seriously. But
How old was he?
I mean, I think and that's the thing. I think he felt like he was learning this so late. I mean, I would
Right.
say, like, he was probably like in his late 40s, you
That's
know?
still, hey, you learn
It's
when you
yeah, it's
learn.
yeah, exactly. But, you know, for him, he was just like, no one told me this. You know, that's how he was
Wow.
feeling. So, but he, you know, like, that was a big thing. And then the third thing was actually my mother. Like, my mother was a big saver, but to, like, the extreme, not to the extreme, like, she saved everything, but to the extreme where she would just squirrel things away. Like, that was just something she got from her mother. You know what I mean? I think
Right.
in different cultures, you do have that with the women. Like, she's hiding money from my dad. She's having me hide money from him. You know what I mean? Like, she's just squirreling things away because she's just like, look, we have to make sure that I'm taking care of us in case anything happens. We have to have something stashed. So
Dang.
I think those are the three big financial lessons that my parents showed me through their life, you know, but I don't think they ever really sat down and, like, taught me, like, how to balance a checkbook or taught me different things like that, unfortunately.
So you're coming into this marriage with an immigrant background, which is really different. I have a lot of friends who come from immigrant families. It's a very different mindset about money and risk and who you trust in terms of your livelihood and your well-being, you know? And so you've got Khalif, who is is he I feel like he's African American. Am I wrong
He
in
is. He's
thinking this?
African
Okay.
American.
So what were the differences that you observed in him and his family's ideas about money, and how did you guys reconcile that?
Oh, man.
Because there's a cultural component. Like, I work with international students.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a
Absolutely.
cultural thing. So were you surprised? Was he surprised actually to discover it? And how did that go?
Okay, so I think the good thing that helped us was actually the spiritual stuff. So I think because we were both Christians, we agreed on a lot of things. So that really helped us to bridge some of that gap. But the one issue that we did have from the beginning, which was great, is the one thing I just mentioned with my mom and the squirreling things away. He was just like, no, we're not gonna have that. He was like, no. He was like, you're not gonna be hiding money in five different corners. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we had to, like, because honestly, like, it was in me to be that same way, you know, because that's what I saw, that's what I learned. I helped my mom do it. You know what I mean? Like I said, you know, that's just, it was just such a thing. He was just like, look, you know, we especially in dealing, like we're trying to, you know, we're talking about marital infid I'm sorry, financial infidelity in a way, right? So
Right.
it had to do with being honest and being upfront, and it's like we're in this together, and financially we're trying to work through these things together. He's like, no, you can't just hide things from me, you know? Like,
Right.
so yeah, so that I think that was probably the biggest cultural issue with the finances was, you know, getting that from my mom, really. It's so funny. It was so funny for me to, 'cause I mean, to me it was so natural. I didn't see like a problem. I'm like, I'm gonna keep this 20 over here to help us later on, oh my gosh.
You guys, you get married, you're like, oh, we got, like, how did that conversation, like, what was the, did you guys have a debt conversation? Like, when did you discover that maybe you have a money related issue that needed to be worked on? Like, did that ever come up, or how did even the blogs come up? Like, what was
Okay,
then the next thing?
I mean, I think for us it was a little different because not different than anyone else, but we didn't have a debt conversation after marriage. We talked about quite a few of these things before. But what happened was that was different was I got really sick soon after we got married. So even in my mind regarding my student loans was okay, I finished school like a semester after we got married, right? So the plan was I'm getting a job, I'm paying off my student loans, end of story. You know? So it wasn't like these things were supposed to be an issue because I was supposed to go to work and we had this whole plan laid out.
And
But
then life happened.
life happened. A month after I graduated from school, as you know, but I guess to tell the audience, I got hit with chronic migraines.
Right.
And it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, I get a migraine once in a while. It was like I was getting headaches and I was down for 2 weeks at a time. I couldn't work. I couldn't, like, my life stopped. Like, my life totally stopped. I was going from doctor to doctor. You know, like, just everything changed. So we weren't a two-income family like we expected. You know, we were one. And honestly, that is one of the ways that the blog came up because it was like, Khalif was like, okay, so now we have to figure out what to do with this debt and we need to bring in another source of income. So, yeah, so that's really how it started.
How did you, I guess my question would be then, you've had that adversity. What has your journey been like? Has it been the way that you had hoped? Have you met some of the financial goals that you were hoping to meet at the time that you were hoping to meet them? And how is that
Not at
going?
all. I'll be honest, not at all. Because you know what it's like when you're unrealistic about things?
Right.
So, for example, with my headaches, I suffered badly with them for 10 years. For 10 straight years.
Oh my
So I was
God. I've had
unrealistic.
migraines. That's, oh my God.
Yeah,
Oh.
so I really, so at every point I thought, okay, I'm going to go through this just a little bit longer, then I can go back to work, and then we can do this, and then, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I kept making unrealistic plans for what our goals would look like and what we would achieve, because, you know, it was all this assumption that I would have my life back by this certain time, and it never happened that way. There was a small portion where, of course, some medication helped for a while, and I went back to work for 8 months, and we poured all that money into paying off some debt, which was great. But guess what? That didn't last either. It was only 8 months, you know. Then it was like we couldn't handle it, and my health failed. So, I had to get to the point where it was like, all right, if my health does not get better. We need to come up with a plan, you know, with this baseline and figure out what we're going to do about our finances from here. Not on the assumption that in 3 months I'm going to be able to get a job getting paid this much
Right.
money and, you know. So for that reason, I would say no, we haven't met these certain goals, but it was because my expectations were really unrealistic about what I could do.
Because you're blogging publicly, how does that make you feel when you're sharing your journey? Like, have you received feedback where you're just like, dang? Or have you, or you know what I mean? Or have you gotten support? Or what has it been like to share your journey? And then, you have these hopes and these guideposts that you're trying to reach and these ideas about what's going to happen, and none of it does.
Right. So the good part for me is that we started blogging in 2010, but the good part for me is that in the beginning it was only him, right? So I was in the background kind of hovering. Like, people knew who I was because I was just incorporating myself, or he would incorporate me in little ways, but I wasn't in the forefront. So he was the one getting all the flack if there was any.
Oh, Lord.
But honestly, just personally though, I mean, it is hard, and that's one thing I do struggle with, and I've always struggled with his choice to be public about things, right? And putting these things out there is, I don't want to put things out there and then fail repeatedly, I'm like,
But
why
do
are you
you
going
think
to
it's
say that?
failure? Because I feel like, don't you as a human being, like, don't you change during a process like this? Like, don't you feel like your mindset is changed and that there will come a time, like, no, you're not where you're at now and you're feeling like it's incremental, but maybe there will be a moment where you're like, all of a sudden it's accelerated and success that I was working for is going to happen.
I agree. Like, that's the other side of it. The other side of it is, I do think it's so human, and it's really helpful for people to see that even though things don't work out the fifth time, it doesn't mean it won't work out the sixth time. And it's helpful for people to see that. And it is, like you said, it's important for us to see each other in a very realistic way, because things don't always work out the first time. We don't always get it right, and we do learn, and we do change. We do evolve, and I think that's the beautiful thing about it. As much as I wish that I hit every mark and things were perfect and we were out of debt today, I do love that what I know now, what I've learned over these years, I love the person I am today trying to do what we're trying to do, as opposed to the person I was 10 years ago.
Do you feel more empowered now?
Absolutely. I absolutely do. I mean, I think that's really the coolest thing too. Like when Khalif started this stuff, he knew so much about personal. Like I said, I knew nothing. All I knew was I'm paying
Right.
my credit card bills off. I knew nothing, and I'm definitely not a personal finance guru. I wouldn't say that, but there's so much that I know now that I had no clue about, and I probably wouldn't have taken the time to learn or really invest in myself. So I can be empowered. It wouldn't have happened. So, going through this journey, and especially with the personal finance blog, has really empowered me so much. I'm so thankful for it. I really am.
For people who are going through tough times financially, what are the like what are a couple of tips that you would share that you've learned in your journey that may be of help to them?
Wow. I mean, first of all, like, there's no hole that you can't get out of, right? It's like other struggles in life. It's what you do one moment to the next. So it's just that idea of take it one step at a time. Make a plan, follow the plan one step at a time, and you'll be better off tomorrow than you were yesterday. Don't just get overwhelmed by the magnitude of your situation. So, I mean, that definitely is one thing, because I know as a person, I have the horrible habit of just saying, this mountain's just too big, I just can't. I can never get out from under it. It's just impossible. But you know what? If I just take that next step and then the next one and the next one, it'll be all right. You know? You'll get there.
Are you
And
guys? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the second thing I would say is to just arm yourself with information. There's so many personal finance blogs out there. There's so many books. There's so many free resources. Don't be too intimidated to learn. Just do it.
What would be your, I'm not the most religious kid on the block, but I have faith and I believe in God, and you guys are approaching the personal finance journey from a biblical perspective, which I actually find really fascinating. I've read the book, oh good Lord, I've read the Bible from front to back. I despite the fact that I'm not really religious, I've read the Bible, and I've been so fascinated by all of the moments in the Bible where they talk about money.
There's a
So
lot of
could
money
you,
in there, isn't
it is
it?
amazing. I think it would blow people's minds. And actually my goal is to read the Talmud, the Torah, as well as the every religious book, because my understanding is every book has similar ideas about debt and money and, you know, not lending money and things like that to other people. So, kind of talking about this from the biblical perspective, what tips or ideas, or what, I guess, would it be a proverb? I feel like it's a proverb. Or, like, what passage, that's the better way to put it, what biblical passage resonates most with you in terms of what not to do with money?
Oh, wow. You caught me
I got meta right
unprepared.
there.
You
No, I
caught
just
me
got meta. I'm in this car, you know, watching traffic, getting meta. So, yeah, a lot of deep thoughts from the car.
That's fine. If you just give me 1 second to find it, though, but I do have it. It comes from 1 Timothy 6. I would say verse 6 through 9, but 6 through 10. But verse 9 is the one that resonates with me a lot. It just says, "Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition."
Oof.
Right? It's pretty dark. But the reason that resonates with me is I just think that people need to be balanced, right? And I think getting out of debt is great. I think that being successful is great. All those things are wonderful things, but it's just as important to not be caught up in wanting riches, and because then you make money this idol in your heart, and it's not supposed to be. You know, just always wanting the biggest and the best, and it can take you somewhere where you don't really want to go. So we should always be careful of that. So that's why I like that verse. It just helps to keep me balanced at what I'm going after, and makes me question why I want certain things and why I'm going after certain things.
Do you ever, as you pay off debt or just manage your money, do you ever feel like you're missing out on things? Like, are you the type of personal finance person who, you know, you're doing a balanced approach, but you're like, I still want to go to the theater, or I still want to do this. How do you manage the process of, you know, living your best life and, you know, meeting your goals? Like, how do you do that?
What we do is we do try to budget in fun, in our budget. So we plan for, we'll plan for different things, and that's just individually or together. Like if I know I want to buy this or I want to do this thing, I go to the theater, like you said. We just try to plan ahead and budget those things in. We're not big on being extreme frugal minimalists. You know what I mean? It's not, we're not doing that either. So we'll budget in the fun. We'll budget in those things when we can, and just really plan ahead for them and save up for them. But
do you guys ever use credit cards now?
Not really. No. The only thing we do with credit cards now is probably try to wisely use the 0% balance transfers when we can. You know, that's probably it. But yeah, not really. I mean, it's fine. It's not the other thing I'll say is we use our Costco card and pay it off at the end of the month. But we've never been like big credit card users to begin with. You know, that was a big part of our debt issue. So it's not a big deal.
So is the debt more the student loans?
Yeah. Well, it's the student loans, and it is like debt from old debt, you know? It's a lot of old debt.
How does it feel as you kind of – what's the emotional, like, feeling as you go through that old debt? Like, are those things that are charged off or just things that have been in your life for a long time? And what's it like as you, you know, pay off each debt? How does it feel?
It feels good because, to me, I mean, debt does really feel like slavery. You know, it really does. It feels like someone owns me.
Right.
So the more we free ourselves from debt, the better it feels. I feel lighter. I feel better. Every
right.
time I can't do something I want to do when I want to do it because of debt. It drives me nuts. You know? So it feels great, especially, like, for example, so annoying when I think about this particular thing. When we got married, we went on our honeymoon in Mexico, and nobody warned us. I wish somebody would have told us.
Oh.
But we got a timeshare.
Oh, God. Do you still have it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, and that's one of those things.
Oh.
And
how can you get out of the timeshare?
Pretty much by trying to sell it, but everyone's trying to sell theirs. You know,
right.
If you go on eBay, you can probably buy a timeshare for a penny right now. people are trying to give them away for free.
Oh.
You know, like, it's just one of those things. But, it's you know, once again, it's just that ignorance. Like, we just didn't know.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know we were naive and we got into this dumb timeshare that we just...
What was it that they, like, what about the timeshare was appealing? And what was it that what was the reality? Like, what was it that they told you?
Oh, let me tell you, they lied. Okay, so so when we got it, it was we got it for every other year, and it was like I think it was like $5,000 at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we could go to Mexico every other year. But then they sell you on RCI, which is like you can trade your week, so you can go anywhere in the country. Like, you don't have to go to Mexico. You can go anywhere else in the country.
Did you even like Mexico? Because I don't see Khalif liking Mexico for some reason.
We really had a good time. We did.
Okay.
We really enjoyed it. But it was more like Khalif with vacations is more like, let's just go on the beach and chill. You know, it's not like let's do a bunch of stuff, you know. So so he had a good time. All right, so what they did, they're like, okay, if you don't use your week, you can trade it in for, you know, and store it up to go somewhere else later on. You can, they said you can sell your week. So you can sell it back to them and actually get cash, you know. Actually, I'm sorry, no. They said that you can, yes, you could sell
your
week to this other company and not have to pay the maintenance fee for that year.
The
right?
maintenance fee was $5,000 a year.
No. That was the amount of the timeshare. The maintenance fee at the time was like $500, right?
So every year you paid $500.
Every 2 years for ours. It was every two years.
Okay.
But if we didn't want it, that's what we could do. We could trade in for the cash value, right? So
already I'm feeling confused by the process, and that's like I feel like I can't do it because I'm confused.
So, and then they told us that we could easily sell our timeshare. It was a piece of cake to this company. They would just buy it. It was, you know what I mean? Like, so pretty much they gave us like five ways we could get out of dealing with this thing. That's what made it so appealing. Whether out of the maintenance fee or getting rid of the timeshare itself, it was supposed to be a piece of cake. Before you know it, the maintenance fee went up so much that the company that was supposed to take it off your hands and you don't have to pay it, they were like, no, this certain company's too expensive. We won't do that anymore. So that was no longer an option. Yep. And selling the timeshare was no longer an option for whatever reason they got it. I mean, so all those outs they gave us no longer existed. So we were pretty much stuck with this thing. So
Oh
yeah,
my
and so that's
God.
how they got us, was just pretty much saying like, here are all these extras or outs that you have. And then when we actually got into it, they all went away. So yeah. That's the bane of my
So
existence. So I'm telling
right now you're
everyone
turning
listening,
selfish.
do not get a timeshare. Don't do it. Do not get a timeshare, people.
Love of all that is holy, do not do it.
Seriously, don't do it. People will sell you their weeks online because they don't want their timeshares. They don't want their weeks. You can get that stuff cheap anywhere. Go on Craigslist, go on eBay. Don't do it.
Oh.
Anywhere you go on vacation, don't do it.
So how do
Okay,
you
done.
travel? Like, instead of this being, timeshare, how do you manage travel?
Well, actually, I mean, I will say we actually do use it to travel a lot. So,
Then.
so we have benefited from it, or actually use it. So that's the only good thing, is that we just don't hate it and not use it. We've used it a lot to go on our vacations and stuff, but we know we would still be better off without it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just
Yeah,
that we're
it's
stuck
one
with
of those,
it.
like, what can you do?
Exactly, it's like we're stuck with it, so you might as well. So it's like, oh, our weeks, our time to use this is almost up. Hey, let's go to South Carolina for a week. You know, it's like that sometimes. So don't do it. So yeah, so debt like that really drives me nuts. Especially because it's so old and we don't want it and shouldn't have never done it, you know.
I haven't asked this question to an interviewee yet, but I'm curious about it because I've been thinking about it a lot. But how many line items are in your budget? Like, have you ever thought about that? Because right now I'm in the process of really aggressively lowering the number of line items that I have on my budget. So, you know how there's like rent, mortgage, electric, whatever, phone, whatever, like that whole list of stuff that you're paying for.
Right.
My goal is to lower that number of outgoing expenses, not necessarily lowering my lifestyle or anything, but just have a lot less to be accountable to. So what have you ever like noticed as you've gone through this journey that, wow, like now your line items have gotten lower, or like, could you talk about that a little bit? Does that kind of make sense?
It does make sense. I think one of the most exciting things for us, it's not so much, well, I will say, what specifically is exciting is watching the number of like credit cards get, written off or decrease from our payment sheet or in our budget. Like that's really exciting, is watching those payments disappear every month. And actually, I paid off one of my student loans, and that disappeared. So watching that, yes, when I tell you, and it was actually pretty funny because there was only like $100 and something left on this loan, right? And there was some big mix-up that happened with them that I had to call them. And because the interest rate was so low, we were like, we shouldn't pay this off yet because there was something else with a higher interest rate. But we're like, you know what? It's just worth it to like get rid of this
It's
one.
100-something
Yeah,
dollars.
we're
Get
just
rid of
like,
it.
right. We're just like, it'll just feel better to get rid of this loan. So we were just like,
Wait,
pay it off.
was it $100 left or was it 100 a month?
No, it was like $100 and something left.
Oh no,
So
get by, Felicia.
yeah,
It's
we're just
time to
like, no,
go.
bye. So yeah, so seeing like those debt items get erased feels really good. But I totally agree with you. Like I'm looking forward to be able to simplify the budget in that way, and to just have less and less line items on there as well. But I think it is.
What?
We actually haven't, I guess, redone our budget in a while, probably a few months. So it probably is time again, anyway, to look at everything again and see what we want to do, and what can we update? Because I think there is some more juggling we can do now.
I could talk to you forever, but I think what I'll do is I really could. So I want to ask you one last question because I'm almost done sitting in the car.
Okay, no problem.
It's warm though, don't worry. What has been the most surprising thing about this debt freedom journey? It's going longer than you thought.
Yes.
You've had some setbacks. You've had to deal with health, issues, and not just yourself, but Khalif as well. And it's been
Yeah.
public. Like, it's been hard. It has. I
Yeah.
know this because you're friends of mine. I'm going through the same process. It's hard.
Yeah.
Why? What has surprised you about the process, and why do you keep on keeping on? Why do it?
I think the I think the most surprising thing for me is the, I'm trying to find the right word. Okay, since I can't think of the right word, let's just say the most surprising thing for me as a person is the fact that I'm not like, or I haven't just given up and saying, you know what, all this is worthless. I'm just going to go in a hole and die somewhere.
I
Like,
mean,
whatever happens,
it's kind
happens.
of heavy to say it that way, but no, I know what you mean. Yeah, like hands up, I give up, I'm done.
Right. You know,
Yeah.
like, I'm just, like, whatever happens, just let it come. I think that surprised me because, like I said, over, especially with such a long illness, I have gone through bouts where I've been depressed and I've been down and I've been, but there is always this drive to keep on going and this knowledge that things can change and they can get better. And like I was saying before, it's just, like, don't worry about the whole journey, but let's take that next step. And I guess because I'm kind of like one of those all or nothing kind of people, I'm surprised that I would have that mindset. That's what surprises me, is that I've, and I think part of it is getting older, right? But just realizing that, hey, you can only do what you can do. But if you just take that next step, you are gonna get there. So I am surprised that my mind has shifted in that way, and that I'm not being just all or nothing, in terms of debt, in terms of even measuring my own successes in that way, or my own sense of self-worth with all these things. And I think that's been really shocking to me.
For people who want to find you and Khalif, how can they find you? And I will be contacting you sometime this spring to do another interview. I feel like we could have talked for like there's all these questions that I have, but that's gonna be another interview.
Yeah, I
So
would love to. Yeah, this is
I
great.
enjoyed this. I might do these interviews from the car from now
You should call it interviews from the car.
I know, right? So how can we find you on like your social media and your websites and
Yes,
things
well,
like
everywhere we are KNS
that?
Financial. And so, Twitter, Facebook, and of course our website, knsfinancial.com. And you can always email us at info@knsfinancial.com as well.